I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health. Our topic today is the prevention and early detection of prostate cancer. We'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting the program. We'd also like to thank GlaxoSmithKline for providing the educational grant to make this program possible. Physicians and other healthcare professionals can earn free CME credit by registering online at discoveryhealthcme.com and taking the post-test. All the graphics and references from today's program will also be available online. It's easy to log on, take the post-test, and earn free credit for the program, so do it today. We are fortunate to have a distinguished group of experts in the studio with us today to talk about prostate cancer screening and prevention. Dr. Otis Brawley, Chief Medical Officer, American Cancer Society, Professor of Hematology, Oncology, and Epidemiology, Emory University. Dr. Gerald Andriol, Jr., Professor and Chief of Urologic Surgery, Washington University School of Medicine, Siteman Cancer Center, Barnes Jewish Hospital. And Dr. Michael Berry, Professor of Medicine, Harvard Medical School, Medical Director John D. Stokel, Center for Primary Care Innovation, Massachusetts General Hospital. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. During the next hour, we'll discuss the following: the epidemiology of prostate cancer, current recommendations regarding prostate cancer screening, including the role of race, age, and family history, the risks and benefits of prostate cancer screening, current research regarding the use of 5-alpha reductase inhibitors to reduce prostate cancer risk, and recent studies regarding diet and other medications for prostate cancer prevention. Over the years, there's been a lot of discussion about prostate cancer, both in the media and among medical professionals. Just how common is prostate cancer, and whom does it affect?
Prostate cancer is the leading cancer diagnosed among men other than skin cancer, and it's the second leading cause of death for men. About 10% of all men dying of cancer die from prostate cancer. In 2009, the American Cancer Society estimates that there'll be about 192,000 men diagnosed with the disease. There'll be about 27,000 who actually die from the disease. We estimate right now that about 1 in 6 is the risk that a man has of actually being diagnosed, but a man has about a 3% chance, 1 in 33, 1 in 35 chance of actually dying from the disease. Risk factors for prostate cancer include age. Indeed, 2/3 of men who are diagnosed with the disease are over the age of 65 at diagnosis. The next risk factor is race. Black men are 2.4 times more likely to die from the disease. They're 1.6 times more likely to actually be diagnosed with the disease.
You know, we're on a demographic edge here where more men are going to enter the age group where they're at risk for prostate cancer. So this has been an important health problem over the last few decades. It's going to become a bigger health problem very soon.
And I agree with my colleagues. This is a really important health problem. It's important to reflect a little bit that some of the statistics that Otis quoted are actually of our own making. One interesting thing to do is to think back before the PSA test was available in the mid-1980s, when men in the United States had about an 8% chance of eventually finding out they had prostate cancer. Now that we're looking for it with the PSA test, that's up to 17%. It's pretty striking that we've almost doubled the risk that men will face a diagnosis of prostate cancer because of PSA. Now, at the same time, there's been a drop in mortality from prostate cancer in the United States. So good things are happening with prostate control here. The big debate is whether screening plays much or a major role in those trends.
Well, Dr. Berry, you mentioned the PSA test. What are the currently available screening tests for prostate cancer?
Well, there are really two key screening tests for prostate cancer. The older one that's been with us for a long time is the digital rectal exam. That's where a clinician inserts a lubricated glove finger into the rectum to feel the lower part of the intestine and the prostate, which sits in front of the rectum. So what the doctor is trying to do is feel lumps or bumps, areas of inconsistency in how the prostate feels that might suggest a prostate problem.
Yeah, I mean, both tests, the PSA and the digital rectal exam, I think should be thought of as complementary. So there are some patients' cancers that will be diagnosed only by the digital rectal exam. Other men's cancers may be diagnosed only by PSA. And so even though men are not particularly fond of the digital rectal exam, nor are the doctors particularly fond of doing the digital rectal exam, I think we need to continue to do it if we're going to be screening for this disease.
I think that's important. The old rule used to be a third of men were diagnosed with an abnormal PSA, a third with an abnormal digital rectal exam, and a third had an abnormality in both. Now, with newer findings from like the prostate cancer prevention trial, we're starting to realize there's a considerable amount of prostate cancer in men who have a PSA less than the traditional value of 4. Indeed, the studies actually show that there's no PSA in which you can clearly exclude the possibility of prostate cancer.
Right. But as you use lower and lower PSA levels to look for prostate cancer, you end up biopsying a larger and larger proportion of the population, and that has substantial downsides.
So what are the current recommendations, and are there routine recommendations, for example, like with colon cancer screening or with mammography?
Well, there's many professional societies that have made recommendations about prostate cancer screening. Most of them agree that there should be discussion of the pros and cons of the PSA test. There are both harms and benefits of getting the test done. So that's the first point I'd make. If I start, for example, with the American Cancer Society recommendation, they recommend offering prostate cancer screening starting at age 50 for average risk men, but doing that earlier, about age 45, if men have a risk factor, for example, if they're African American or they've got a family member, a brother, father with prostate cancer. If there's an even stronger risk history, say two family members affected or being both African American or with a family history, that screening might start at 40. And then continue offering the test, not simply doing it, having a discussion. If a man decides to be tested, testing them periodically down the line. There's general agreement that at some point, as men get old enough, it probably isn't worth continuing prostate cancer screening. There's some controversy around what that stopping age is. Most groups agree that when there's less than a 10-year life expectancy, that's around age 75 for men in average health in the United States, that one should be thinking twice, if not three times, about prostate cancer screening. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recently reviewed their recommendations and published an update actually saying that they couldn't decide whether to recommend for or against prostate cancer screening for men younger than age 75. They felt the answer just wasn't there, and that over age 75, they recommended against doing the PSA test. I should say those recommendations came before the availability of some large clinical trials we're going to be talking about, so it'll be interesting to see how the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force readdresses those recommendations. I'll just add that the American Urological Association has now come out and suggested that perhaps screening should begin at age 40. And again, that's an earlier age than's been recommended with other groups. There's some rationale there, although I think there's no consensus that we should be moving earlier, particularly given the results of the recent trials.
Yeah, speaking in part to the recommendations of the American Urological Association, you know, PSA is prostate specific. It's not prostate cancer specific. And wrapped up in the concept of measuring a PSA is that the doctor and the patient are learning something about the prostate, not just about prostate cancer. So as urologists, we're interested not only in prostate cancer, but in BPH as well. And knowing what a man's PSA is at a given point in time gives me some opportunity to predict how severe his BPH is apt to be in the future, what his risks of prostate cancer are apt to be in the future, and so forth. So that's, I think, why there's a rationale to, at, you know, the beginning of middle age, at age 40, obtain a baseline PSA and then make some judgments based on how the PSA changes down the road.
quite honestly, what all of these recommendations have in common, including the American Urologic Association, is the fact that there are potential risks associated with screening, there's a potential benefit, and men should be informed of that, and then those men should make a recommendation. The AUA says men who choose to be screened. It doesn't say all men. And then we should also draw a distinction. There's no organization I'm aware of that actually recommends mass screening. We've had mass screening in terms of vans going to shopping malls and doing screening. That's the sort of thing that really needs to stop. And this needs to be a decision that's brought to be within the physician-patient relationship.
Yeah, I think so too, Otis. And something that I've seen is that a patient is referred to me because of an abnormal PSA on the basis of some blood testing that his primary care doctor ordered. The patient had no idea what PSA was or why the primary care physician even ordered it. And it was almost as though, well, I'm getting my cholesterol checked. I guess he checked my PSA as well.
People might look at this test and say, it's a simple blood test. Why the discussion? But this really is a fateful decision that has pros and cons. It can lead to some pretty serious treatments, and people should know what they're getting into. This is not a test you should make a decision about getting in the face of avoidable ignorance.
The problem is what epidemiologists and screening experts call overdiagnosis. That is the diagnosis of something which actually is cancer, but it's a cancer of no risk to the man's health. There literally are a group of men who have prostate cancer, but if we never bother it, it's never going to bother them. We still don't have great tests to be able to say, Mr. Smith, you have prostate cancer, but it's the kind God meant for you to die with and not die of. Mr. Jones, you have prostate cancer, and you have a real problem that we need to address.
Gentlemen, if we could focus on the high risk, what constitutes high risk, and are there special recommendations for men who are considered at high risk?
Right now, high risk is a man who has a family history, especially a family history of a brother or brothers or father who've had prostate cancer, especially prostate cancer at an earlier age in their 40s or 50s. Black men are also at higher risk. Other than that, right now, all we can say is age seems to be a risk factor. Many organizations suggest that if they decide that they want to get screened, they still need to make that decision. If they decide that they want to get screened, they might want to start getting screened at an earlier age, perhaps age 45 or age 40.
And they may need to be screened more frequently, because there's almost a little paradox here. If you're at high risk for prostate cancer, that cancer may be very aggressive, and it may progress in between screening intervals. So really, if you're concerned of a very strong family history, for example, maybe the screening interval should not be 1 year, maybe a little shorter.
And it's awfully easy to push the age of screening down for everyone, including the average risk man. I'm very worried about that. Very few prostate cancer deaths in average risk men happen below the age of 55, and our best data from the large screening trials that have been done suggests that for men, say, even in their early 50s, there's not much benefit. So I'm a little concerned about pushing the screening age for average risk men down into the 40s.